The football playoffs squeezed into one small cup.
Setbacks pave the way for comebacks.
Track the playoffs now. This is 7 in Heaven.
Down and dirty, let's go.
You go first.
Oh, I'm going first. It's more difficult than you'd think because the Browns are 13th, so I wanted to go very, very quickly. Right now, if the playoffs started today, you'd be out. All right, here we go. Top to bottom. Number one, Kansas City. Number two, I'm going to put Buffalo.
Ooh.
They're up one. Number three, remember, this is not a power rankings. This is playoffs. Playoffs, who we think is going to make the playoffs and in what ranking they're going to be or what, you know, seed they're going to be. Number three, the Houston Texans. They have had to grind it out. C.J. Stroud's played well, but they're grinding out some football games. Defensively, it's been a little bit of a mix-up. You know, it's odd watching them. Number four, the Baltimore Ravens. Number five,
they're taking on a little bit of water here. I'm still going to say the Los Angeles Chargers.
Really?
Yeah.
First wild card team.
Man, I don't want to put the Jets out there. Already, you're hearing some of the Robert Saleh stuff. Number six. I can't believe we'll design this. Pittsburgh Steelers. Number seven.
Begrudgingly.
You heard it in my voice. Very begrudgingly. Number seven. It's either between the Denver Broncos, I know, or the Jets. Damn it, I'm picking the Jets. Fine.
Lesser two evils. I was wondering, if the Jets fire Saleh,
yeah,
who in the world are they going to hire as the interim head coach?
Whoever gave the guy ayahuasca.
Like, it's not going to be...
They're going to hire a medicine man from Shangri-La, and that's going to be your head coach.
Shaman of the NFL.
Yep.
Can't be Nathaniel.
But it won't be the last.
Can't be Nathaniel Hackett.
Is he friends with Aaron Rodgers? Then it's going to be Nathaniel
Hackett.
Oh,
my God. All right, Kenny.
That's what the Jets do. You think we're obsessed with quarterbacks.
Shango is going to be the head coach.
Okay.
How did they ruin...
Well done.
How did they ruin Breece Hall? Like, how did that happen? Like, the backup's already better?
If you make a man a Jet, he will be ruined. There's been one Jet
but who's never... man to Jet.
You can ruin everybody. There's a one man who hasn't been ruined by being a Jet. That's Joe Namath. The rest, left in ruins.
All right, we'll start out. Kansas City Chiefs, number twos. This is where we already have a discrepancy between the two of our seven in heavens. I've got the Ravens. I think the Ravens, their ceiling, I think, is just going to be higher than everybody else. The Bills at number three. I have the Texans fourth. I've just not been impressed at all watching the Texans this year. And I know it's one of the surprises.
I saw them third.
The other team, like, you know, last year we just christened C.J. Stroud because of name, came in and torched our defense, had a great rookie year. Same thing, Jordan Love. And I know he got injured, but man, did he looked bad.
It's different when they take you seriously. It's really different. You ain't sneak up on anybody anymore. And we've had to deal with that a couple of times. Like, you ain't sneaking up on nobody this year.
All right, we get to the wild card, and this was brutal. I went Steelers. I have no faith.
Wow.
I have no faith in ever. I guess you could say that Justin Fields played his best game top to bottom. But, man, T.J. Watt was terrible in that game.
How dare you say something bad about him?
Not Hayward. Who's injured? And I asked Filippone about the situation
Alex Highsmith, and then they had an offensive lineman just go down, like, with either an Achilles or ACL.
And remember,
I forget.
Filippone's like, it's not going to matter. Well, it mattered. It absolutely mattered that they didn't have him.
Well, that's what you get for listening to Pony say anything about any sport, especially football.
I'm going Chargers next as that second wildcard team. And finally, I did the same thing you did. I waffled between the Jets and the Broncos.
I know who you're picking.
No, you don't, because I'm going Jets.
Whoa.
Even though I think they could fire their head coach. Bo Nix has the worst down-the-field throwing numbers rookie 4 years in the history of the NFL since they started coming up with those stats.
I'm sick and tired. Come on. Get your asses in gear over there.
This AFC
did you just hear what we're saying here? I got a team that will try to run its way to the playoffs. Pittsburgh, God, they just pull everybody down into the swamp with them. And then you got the Jets. And again, you just mentioned, like, we all just made, Owen just said Papa Shango is going to be their head coach by the end of the year, guys. Get your heads out of your ass and get going. I know it's your off day.
I have a source.
Should I say that to Rodney when he walks in?
Yes,
Rodney, get your head out of your ass and get going.
Please let him know.
Now, that's another team's phrase that we're going to be talking about at 720. And that is seven in heaven. Outstandingly done. Nick Wilson had himself an identity crisis for Kevin Stefanski yesterday.
I don't know what Kevin's coaching identity is. Was it the Gary Kubiak offense? Is that what it was? Because that's a system that's not an identity. My favorite Kevin Stefanski is aggressive Kevin Stefanski. And then in a moment where I think we all can understand the importance of that opportunity early in that situation to get points on the board, I would have thought that's where he showed up. You could have taken the 13-10 lead into halftime. Worst case scenario, you're giving that team the ball back at the 40. And I think of all the mistakes Kevin made yesterday, I think that's the most glaring one. The number one thing a player has to be able to know is, who are you as a coach? And I don't think the Browns know what to fall back on. I don't think they know who to fall back on. And I don't think anyone knows, when the you-know-what hits the fan, who's going to stand up and say, we got to do better. Because through 4 weeks, it hadn't happened. I mean, we got the backup quarterback giving up the pregame speeches. We got the backup quarterback playing peacemaker between the starting quarterback and the right tackle. Where are the Browns' leaders? Because Kevin's supposed to be one, and then he makes decisions like he did yesterday, which sure seems like he's coaching scared.
Nick Wilson, afternoon drive, talking to, was he with Peterlin at that time?
Peterlin joined.
Yeah, I see what Nick is saying. I don't even disagree with Nick. However, I want to examine it a little bit further and say, does he know who he's coaching yet? I mean, he definitely coached scary. I'm not defending what happened at the end of the first half. You guys are right about what happened at the end of the first half.
Honestly, I went back and we were not hard enough on Stefanski yesterday.
Then let him have it. Get your paddle out and spank him. Let's go.
It just made no sense. And the more that I've tried to think about it, it just makes zero sense, given that the weather was not an element there. Thinking that you're just pinning them back was the big victory there. It wasn't. The big victory would have been getting 3 points to try to help your sputtering offense. I mean, that just I can't understand that.
Because he was scared. Because he doesn't trust anybody right now. I think he's lost trust. That play there tells me, like last year, he did a lot of things. The fourth downs, going for the gusto. He trusted his defense. I think right now he questions his defense. I think he questions, and by that case, he has to question Jim Schwartz. It's not an excuse. I think he should have went for the three. I agree with you. Should have went for the three. But he was afraid that if he gives the Raiders the ball at the 40, what's the worst thing that could happen? Well, they could get themselves a big play, get a field goal, or, God, if they score a touchdown and they're getting the ball back after the half, he knows this team comes out flat at halftime. They usually do. And they 9 times out of 10, they make him a smart guy. They come out sleepy at halftime. And, good God, I mean, you go from 10-0 to 24-0. Heaven forbid. So he was afraid. That's just an explanation. It's not an excuse. I would like to go for the three. What's the worst that's going to happen? You're going to lose? Well, hell, you can lose anyway. Because I just told you, like, he knows, like, I didn't break any new ground to him talking about the scripted plays and what the defense sees. He knows the defense is seeing that. So now he has to play a game of, how do I make up for the deficiencies that my offense has? And if your defense is going to be deficient, that's another thing that you have a problem with.
Like, it has to be something else on that football team. If you were here last year for that Joe Flacco run and to see how Kevin Stefanski called a game with Joe Flacco, who 39 years old at the time of that run, and now you're watching how he's calling the game with the guy you paid all the money to and the guy that is supposed to be the franchise, like, that has to be jarring for guys on the team. Like, I'm not trying to overthink it here. Just imagine what it was like in that locker room. In that amazing, magical month, and those same guys now are in the locker room now, and they're 1-3, and they're punting to try to pin teams back instead of taking points at the end of the half. Like, that has to be amazing.
It is. I think it's something that is mind-blowing to them. I think they're looking back for something that isn't there, and I don't want to say it's just because Joe Flacco isn't there, but I don't think they have the same type of chutzpah that they've had in the past. And it goes right with Nick. Again, I love disagreeing with Nick. I love poking holes in any argument that he has. But again, I got Jameis Winston giving the hype-up speeches before the game. I got Jameis Winston being the guy who they mic up. Who's the leader? I mean, you put a C on his chest and you give him a game ball, but everything else, I mean, what's real, what's not? And I defended him the way he played on Sunday. I said, and I had plenty of people hammering me for what I said yesterday about his play. I said, guys, it's not the entire season. He's been pretty trashy the entire season. Yesterday was good. And by the way, if he continues to turn in performances like that yesterday and they lose those games, it's going to be a different conversation about who stays and who goes. Because before it was basically 100%. He continues to play like that. Kevin ain't going anywhere. Andrew Berry ain't going anywhere. No. He plays like that, like he did on Sunday. There's a different conversation to be had. 216-474-0092. Like, that's the way I think a lot of people have to look at this. Like, I think there's a lot of people that don't like him, and they want him to, if they're going to lose, they don't want the team to lose. If the team's going to lose, they want him to fail so they get rid of him sooner. But if he plays like that, I'm just telling you, the dollars and cents say he stays, the other half goes. And I think the players will go whichever way the wind is blowing. And that does not create leadership. If we're talking about guys going in whatever direction they can to stay on the ship, that is not something that leads. That's going to be a big problem. If we're already thinking about our futures here personally and we're not steering in a direction towards the playoffs, that's going to create even more problems, and it's going to be December and Brie all over again. And instead of Santa Claus, it's Zach Jackson who comes down the chimney. So what is Kevin Stefanski's identity? I want to get to these Donovan Mitchell comments coming up here in less than 10 minutes, but what is Kevin Stefanski's identity? Right now, I think he's looking for one with his team. He is a guy, again, he is a manager. He is not Lombardi. He's not Dan Campbell. He is not going to line up and do defensive drills with these guys. And I know that that's what fans want. Maybe that's what the Browns need. Maybe that's what's missing in the Kevin Stefanski.
Yeah, like a Mike Vrabel is somebody who will do that. Who will get in there and mix it up.
Guys, they played the audio themselves right in front of the guy. I mean, yeah, he can be very Bill Lumberg in how he does the business. And there are times they went, and I think he's gotten more emotional as time has gone on. I do.
There are different ways. There are different ways to do it. Like Kyle Shanahan, it has never been warm and fuzzy, but he commands the respect of the room. Part of it is his resume, his last name.
He knows how to talk to football players because of his dad.
Yes,
he knows.
Yes, I think that matters. You know, Stefanski, we have asked plenty of players over the years or people that have been around that locker room, like, what is the secret sauce? How does that guy who doesn't seem to be all that fired up, doesn't seem to be getting in guys' faces, how does he command respect? And we've had people say that he absolutely does. And he's obviously got the hardware now with the 2-time coach of the year. He hasn't had a huge playoff run. I mean, normally that you know, Kyle Shanahan has that. McVay has that. Like, guys have that. Like, Bill Belichick, he has his way, right? He has his way over the years. But, like, there was no doubt he commanded respect for the better part of a football coaching career, yeah. 40 years.
He does what Shanahan does, and you know I'm no fan of the guy, he doesn't really do stupid. Like, this last year with Brandon Ayuk was the closest to stupid that I have seen the 49ers partake in. Like, can you think of another incident I can't think of where they've kind of been like, well, this is kind of stupid. What are we doing here? Like, I don't
agree.
Know. And I think that even though he has the same type of mentality that's very stoic, he doesn't do stupid very well.
Mike Tomlin is another one.
Yeah. Stefanski, over his now 5 seasons, he's dealt with a lot of stupid.
He has. He absolutely has.
And really, honestly, it's not where he's dealt with it. He's had to put up with a lot of stupid. And I think there's a difference there. And so when we get into these moments here where you're 1-3 and someone's got to dig deep, it's got to come from somebody wearing a uniform. It ain't going to come from him. And I do think that Browns fans have a problem with that because they want to save their season. And there's nothing worse that a Browns fan wants to do. There's nothing they want to do more than to go in a locker room and start cussing them out and talking to them as men and get them going. And they feel the head coach should do that. He is not. I've never accused him of doing that because he's not that guy.
Boy, Kenny, in the offseason, when we finally got the news of the Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski extensions, I remember posing the question, when somebody like Kevin Stefanski gets an extension, normally when a head coach gets an extension and has the success that he has had, especially with a franchise like this and getting to the playoffs twice, and doing it with a bunch of different quarterbacks and winning two-time coach of the year. What happens when they get those extensions? I pose this question. When it happened, do they get increased power?
I don't think he has.
Normally they do.
Usually they do.
Normally they do.
Usually they do.
Sean Payton didn't come in to New Orleans with all the power in the world. He amassed it over time, and then it became his organization. It just did. It flat out just did. And they weathered the storm. They had a huge scandal. And then it was
out of football for a year, technically.
Yeah, he was out of football. And it was unequivocal when he came back. It's your team. It's your team. You make the decisions.
Yeah, you're right.
You get to handle personnel. To handle everything.
I mean, you've brought up before on the air, I pause, dump it if you have. No, you brought it up on the air before. You have people who have told you it was not his decision to let go in Alex Van Pelt.
Van Pelt, right. And
said it.
And so I'll ask the question today, as they are 1-3, and we are asking a bunch of existential questions about a football team and an organization.
Yeah. I mean, he wins Coach of the Year, and we're taking power away.
Right, that's what I want to know. Is that a fly in the ointment? Is that going to be a problem? Like, for this team, because one thing I think Stefanski has done really well over the years is deal ultimately with a lot of stuff, a lot of BS, a lot of stuff behind the scenes. And I think he has shown, whether it was the COVID year, I mean, he came in with an unbelievable amount of adversity that some other coaches couldn't do. Other coaches, like, threw their hands up in the air and said, it was COVID. What was I supposed to do? Kevin Stefanski, they were doing the work, and they were getting it done, and they were getting results. Okay? The Odell Beckham stuff, things went off the rails there, obviously, and I think they learned from that. I do, and the Baker stuff, behind the scenes, it wasn't pretty. But then you get this Deshaun Watson. I thought it was a cheat code at the time. I'm like, man, the Browns got an ultimate shortcut here. Well, clearly it wasn't. And I wonder how that is in that locker room, in that organization, when you have a head coach who is being tested again here in year 5.
John and Wadsworth, you're next up on the Fan.
Good morning, guys. How's it going?
Not bad. Go ahead, John.
So you guys mentioned something in the last segment. I was actually trying to call in yesterday morning to say something you were talking about. Something is definitely broken in this locker room. As Browns fans, we have become so accustomed to knowing the emotional vibe and the roller coaster that we ride to where, you guys said yesterday, when we missed that extra point, we were like, oh God, here we go. We knew it was going to bite us. And this is basically the same team we had last year, and it just feels like someone, peed in their Cheerios. It does not feel the same.
It feels like they're missing leadership in some fashion.
Yeah, and I'm not saying this because I'm anti-Deshaun. I'm not. I'm tired of that roller coaster too, but I have a hard time not thinking that he might not be at the center of this because, look how the team responded in the games he was out last year. They just had, like you used the word chutzpah before, they had that. And then Amari Cooper saying last year with Flacco that, that Joe Flacco was an energy multiplier. I mean, there's just signs on the wall. Like, you have to wonder if these guys are really bought into Deshaun. Are they tired of the roller coaster? Something's just off. Something is just off.
Now, can it change if he builds
John,
on some of the success he had last game?
He has to play well. That's the only way it's going to change. I mean, there's guys like there are guys who, they're not that great, and guys go through the wall for him, and they end up looking better because they're not that great, and they somehow get guys' attention as leaders. There's been plenty of quarterbacks in this league that are not Allen, not Mahomes type of talents, and they get guys to play with them and play for them in a lot of cases because they're able to lead and they know what makes the other guys, and they know what makes each other tick. I mean, hell, I hate to say it. I think that Baker Mayfield learned a lot of lessons when he was here about being a leader, being a true leader. I mean, to a lot of people, he stuck his bleeping foot in his mouth talking about Tom Brady last week on some podcast, and all of a sudden, what did they do? They went out and beat the brakes off the Eagles and embarrassed them again, like they did in the postseason last year. I mean, you go back and watch that game; they're playing with them, they're playing for them. Like, you can learn some of this stuff over time, but like, things change, and I don't know if they have enough time to do all that right now. Peter in Perrysburg, you're next up on the Fan.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Hi, Peter.
I feel like the coaching is the biggest problem, and I want to say, I don't want the coaches fired, but what were they doing in West Virginia? What were they doing in Berea? It's like they didn't show up for training camp and just rolled into the season. And I know, Stefanski said, well, we got to get better, and it's like, yeah, No, duh. You guys don't look like you're practicing. And devil's advocate, Lima will say, well, what do you want them to say? I want them to – I don't know what they're doing in practice. What were they doing in the offseason? And to say, like, it's all the leadership, it's all in Deshaun Watson. Like, I'm not the biggest Deshaun Watson fan in the world. But to not say that, like, the head coach isn't getting people motivated. Like, what are they – he's in charge of practice. The coaches are in charge of practice. And if they're not executing on game day, it means they're not practicing properly. They're not focusing on the right areas. And I've been saying for 5 years, I love Kevin Stefanski as a play caller 80% of the time. But 10, 15 minutes a game, he panics. And you can see it. You saw it on Sunday because he's all about analytics. But what are the analytics of making a 58-yard field goal versus having to pin them inside the three and get a safety? What are the odds of the field goal versus executing both of those things?
Although maybe Myles Garrett changes the math on that a little bit, but I definitely get your point.
No. You have to do both of those, though. You have to pin them inside the three and
which is hard to do.
Which is hard to do. You have to hope that they drop back and they don't just push. They don't do 12 personnel and push for 3 yards, and now they're at the six. Like, that's panic. That is panic.
There's also a level of accountability that's brought there, and I'll finish it up with this. Peter, thank you very much for the call, because I want to get to this Donovan Mitchell stuff, speaking of accountability. God, I'm going to bring out the dead horse and just bring out the ball bat again, but I have to do it. I've been hard on Andy Dickerson. Daryl wants to fire him. I wouldn't go that far.
Yeah.
At least I wouldn't go that far yet. I've been hard on Andy Dickerson. I know for a fact. Listen, everybody here prays at the altar of Bill Callahan. They're mad at the Browns for letting him go. Again, he wanted to coach with his son. He could have just retired if they weren't going to give him what he wanted, which he very well, I think he would have done it. It is known, and I think it's becoming more and more well known, that it wasn't kumbaya with the offensive line and Bill Callahan. And I think that there was a level of accountability there that he probably held not just the offensive line to, but I think anybody who talked to him in that building. So I don't think he was a warm and cuddly figure. I don't think that he was a major league jerk to everybody. I think that he just had a level of accountability on everybody, and it made those guys move. Because Kevin Stefanski is, again, he's a schemer. He's a guy who's going to draw it up on the board. He can come up with good offensive game plans. We've talked about that. Hell, I think he's done it even this year. But is there going to be a level of accountability where man on man, you are going to be able to get what you need out of these guys? Bill Callahan's able to do it. It's been proven over his 30, 40 years in professional football and college football as well. Kevin Stefanski, some guys just miss that gear. And I don't know what it is. But when we talk about what Bill Callahan's missing, run game stuff, what's going on with the run game now? Offensive line, putrid, as bad as it's been in almost a decade that I've been doing this. Here with you, it's as bad as it's been. And then you just get to the level of accountability. Well, I know Bill Callahan did a lot of things, and holding people accountable was one of the main things that he did. I mean, those are three things right there. And if you don't have Bill Callahan anymore, you're going to run into problems. Or at least it seems that they're running into problems.
A coach that clearly Stefanski, you know, leaned on the running game. We talk
great
about
respect.
All the time. And yeah, Stefanski is a collaborator, right? You know, you have your dictator coaches. Stefanski is not that guy. Well, if you just lost one of the big collaborators, like that is going to make his job a lot more difficult.
216-474-0092. Let's get to Donovan Mitchell here. This is him yesterday, or was this from yesterday or a couple days ago? I want to know which one. Was this yesterday?
It was yesterday.
Okay, Donovan Mitchell at Media Day yesterday. Cavs are getting ready to embark on session one of their preseason and their training camp down at the IMG Academy in Florida. But he was at training camp yesterday, or Media Day yesterday. He had this to say about what transpired getting ready for this last offseason.
I knew for sure, I would say probably around January, around the Paris game. I knew for sure. I had thought about the beginning of the year. It's been in my mind. I mean, I knew for sure probably January, February, that this is where I wanted to be. So it was kind of funny watching everybody say that this is how I'm feeling, but I knew.
I thought that was interesting yesterday. I still wonder, had they have lost the Orlando series, like, it wouldn't have changed his mind at all? I mean, they were in big-time jeopardy of losing that series. They were down at the half in Game 7 against a team you had no business.
I was following along on the cruise ship. I'm going, oh, my God, I can't believe this is going to happen.
Incredible. So I do wonder if that would have changed his mind, because, man, the Cavs would have been getting hammered. they would have been getting hammered by everybody for this trade not
working
out.
I don't think they would have been blaming him either.
No,
national media, I don't think, would have been blaming him.
No, they would have been.
I don't think local people would have been blaming him.
They would have been going off on the way the team was assembled, the Darius Garland situation. Mobley was horrific in that series offensively. Fortunately, Mobley came on big time at the end of the Boston series, or we'd be having totally different conversations. But the other part of that is, yeah, Donovan Mitchell, who made it known when he was in Utah that he didn't want to be in Utah, he did it behind the scenes. He did it in maybe a more professional manner than some of these other superstars. But they also drew a direct line to where? New York, and him going home, and him wanting to be a New York Knick. That stuff wasn't just made up or out of thin air. So then he gets traded to Cleveland, and he has said nothing but great things about his time in Cleveland. And you could see it in body language. You could see it in emotions. The stuff that he has said about the city.
By the way, I think that these two things can be true. I think he could like it here and like the people and also desire to go back home at some point in his career.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Which I don't mean to bring that back up because he signed, but we don't have to.
We've put that off.
I said that then. I said I wouldn't surprise me if that were the case. Go ahead.
So with all of that said, I do kind of laugh when around every turn, Donovan Mitchell is like, I was never going anywhere. And his teammates, he told us consistently that he was going to stay. Yeah, but the media was certainly on the outside looking in. He could have ended any of the speculation at any time. He chose not to. So that continued to bubble, behind the scenes. Like, all right, it's one thing to tell some teammates. It's another thing to just, you have reporters. You have people that follow your career. You have people that maybe Donovan Mitchell doesn't trust any media. I don't know. But he could have ended the story pretty easily, could he not have?
It could have made things easier for all of us, but I don't think it would have made things easier for him. What if a team, he is a desirable player. What if a team was willing to go out there and make some sort of a deal that he would be interested in? Maybe it's not New York. Maybe it was L.A. He couldn't play that card. The NBA pro sports in general is so cloak and dagger. I don't think he could actually do it. It would have saved us a lot of time and trouble. I just don't know in real time if he could have said that.
This,
I want to bring it back.
This to me seemed more self-inflicted than anything. You could have ended the rumors.
Sometimes you just need a fix.
FML, my life.
My life.
FML,
fix my life.
Kenny, what do we do?
Fixing lives.
My life.
Might fix a couple things here because Ken's conscience might be fixed here in a few seconds.
We'll find out.
So we'll get to that. This was very interesting. We're getting ready for a huge playoff run. It's a calm before the storm, I think, for the Guardians. And I'm seeing a ton of Guardians jerseys all over the place. And Owen had mentioned that there was a new jersey in the household.
Yeah.
What did your wife purchase this?
My son's birthday is in 20 days, right? And he's a huge Guardians fan. He might be the biggest Guardians fan in the house. Loves baseball. He's the youngest. We decided, we went to the game on Saturday night, and we said, hey, you can open up your birthday present early if you want. Got him a Guardians jersey to wear to the Guardians
game. That's awesome.
All right.
She found it she said it was cheaper than a lot of the other ones. Like, okay, cool. Unfortunately, well, maybe unfortunately, it's a Josh Naylor jersey, which is his favorite player.
Yeah, why would that be cheaper?
Yeah. Well, start reading the signs, right?
Boy.
We got Saturday night after we left the game, we got the poster of next year's schedule. Guess what? Guardian, who is pretty prominent on the team right now, is not featured on the poster.
Man, you told me that, and I guess it makes sense, but like Josh Naylor is one of the fan favorites. Like, Who is more popular with the Guardians team, with the fans, right now outside of Jose Ramirez
and
Class A? Like, who's more popular?
I think he's more popular than Class A.
Boy, that's interesting. Yeah, I mean,
I think he's more popular than Class A.
Although Class A has done a lot this last year, I see a lot more of him floating around and kids talking about him because of the, he can touch 102, 101, 102, right?
He's the best in the big leagues at what he does.
But you see him every day, and you see him four or five times a day. I think he's more popular than him. He's not better. Don't get that mixed up.
Well, and we had to have the discussion, and we had had the discussion in the past, over the summer, when he's really loving Naylor, and I go, bud, he's almost playing too good. He's almost played himself out of Cleveland.
Right, we wondered about that.
The way that they do contracts around here unless we get another sweetheart deal.
Man, come on, man.
But
it's true.
He is. It's his first love. Like, you have your first love as a player, right? Who was
Albert
your first?
Bell.
Yeah. So if you would have gotten an Albert Bell jersey when you were a kid, you would have worn that thing all the way into, you know, didn't matter that he was no longer on the team. I know he's going to be fine with it. I don't know if out in the real world, going to school, things like that, how that's going to be accepted next year. I'm almost a little guarded.
I will say this. It was different with Bell because he was like the first one I knew who left because of money.
Yeah.
And now we're just kind of like used to it. So like right. It's like, well, and that was really ugly. So I don't think I would have worn an Albert Bell jersey had I had one. I don't think I would have worn the Albert Bell jersey because it was an ugly breakup between the two. But I get totally what you're saying. Now, when your kid's a kid, which he is a kid, it would be understandable. So he was still wear the jersey. He's still wear the Josh Naylor jersey.
Okay.
Can he get the...
Now, can I get him another one? This one was the blue one. Can we buy him the white one, too?
Well, you're going to get two Josh Naylor jerseys?
Once things go down.
Well, if they get rid of Josh,
be on deep discounts.
Will Bo change his number to 22?
There's another thing to it. There's another part to it. What number would Travis Bezzano wear next year? Do we know? Anybody? Mitch?
Know.
Mitch, speak now or forever hold your peace. What number is Travis Bezzano down in Lake County? Does anybody have any idea?
37.
All right, could he just wear 22 here? What was his number in college?
37.
His number was 37 in college, so he would just wear 37 here.
I believe it was number 11 for... it's between 11 and 37.
He ain't wearing number 11 here. Okay. I'm just saying, I'm looking for a player that they could give number 22 to that maybe you could... What's the Stitch and Switch?
Yeah.
Is the place you go to?
That seems like a bunch of companies
do this now. That's a Browns jersey that you get... fixed on that one just because, you know, there's so many different names that go in there. Yeah, I think it's okay. I think it's perfectly fine. Speaking of the kiddos, you guys wanted me to take this call.
Yeah. We've got to have resolution here.
Heather, the teacher in Sheffield Lake, who I guaranteed the victory to last week, she is right now here on the show.
Heather, I have had so many people that have either you have taught their kids... People have reached out to us. They remember your phone call, and it made an impact.
Really? That's nice to hear. Well, that's actually pretty much why I'm calling, Ken. I was driving into school yesterday morning, feeling pretty bummed out like every other Browns fan, and I couldn't bring myself to call you yesterday, feeling bad that I guilted you into guaranteeing the win.
Frankly, I'd never talk to you again after what had happened, so this is a surprise. Yeah.
No, so the kids start coming in. They are smiling. They're excited. Half of them had on Browns clothes. They're telling me they watched the game. I mean, it could have mattered less to them whether we won or not. It could have mattered less that you guaranteed the win or not. They were just excited to be Browns fans.
Wow.
And they were excited that their crazy teacher got on the radio and that, you know, they got on the radio. And it made me think about perspective. You know, I grew up watching the Browns. I was 7 years old for the drive, 8 years old for the fumble. Like, it wasn't about winning. I remember those moments watching with my dad. It's about loyalty and tradition, and you know, I was feeling bad about raising a new generation of Browns fans, but I don't. It's what we do, and you know, it's important. And I've had, like you said, I've had parents at conferences say to me, "Thank you for sharing your passion about Cleveland sports," because you know, I had a dad say, "It's given me a bond with my daughter that I haven't had in 5 years. Like, she wants to watch the Guardians now because you put the playoff game on while they were at school." Stuff like that.
That's
so
a nice
I wanted
thing.
To share that. Yeah, it's about
all right.
Perspective.
Well,
and it's okay. We're doing a good thing here, Ken. We're not guaranteeing anymore. That's not happening. But
I wish I would have had you call in yesterday. I mean, I was up all night getting harassed by people who said I let children down.
Oh, I know. Well, I honestly got harassed too. Everybody was saying, "I can't believe you made him guarantee a win." I'm like, "Geez, sorry." So anyway, I just wanted to share that. It's all good, you know. It is what it is. And hopefully, I mean, we would love for it to be about winning in Cleveland. It just unfortunately hasn't really been in my lifetime, but that's okay.
Well, Heather, thank you very much. I do appreciate you following up on it. And I hope you and the kids have a wonderful day. Thank you.
Thanks, Ken. You guys too. Bye.
Yes, ma'am. Heather, the teacher in Sheffield Lake.
See, that is what it's
that's
all about.
Wonderful.
Raising that next generation of Browns fans. Doesn't even matter that they lost and lost to a bad team, and it was humiliation. There was a guarantee behind it. Think about that.
People wonder whether or not the quarterback's good, and half the people, if they lose, they want the quarterback to look lousy, so they get rid of him. And the head coach, they don't like the head coach, and now we have Amari Cooper dropping passes, and Jerry Jeudy says he's tired. They don't need to worry about any of that stuff. None of that at all. All they have to worry about is, in their little minds, it's exactly what I said yesterday. Enjoy being a youth. Enjoy the freedom of childhood.
See, Ken, a couple of weeks ago, you brought up your football team and how some kids liked other teams, and I thought you had an obligation to try to push them to being Browns fan. You did it here, and you didn't even try, really.
That's a good point.
You made a guarantee you probably shouldn't have made. But
see, you're changing lives in a positive way.
So should I make more guarantees?
Maybe that's the moral of the story.
Bring
here.
Bring them back.
Well,
guarantee.
Did you see what Daniels did? I guarantee it anything after
Kenny.
That performance.
Let's go, Kenny.
The only thing I can guarantee is that John Greco joins us next to answer what the hell is going on with DeJuan Jones on the fan.